Ladies and gentlemen,
you want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
Week 13 is in the books. Welcome in. It is another edition. Get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. We'll check in with our executive producer, Ryan Bershinger, in a bit as he streamed defenses. If you were streaming offenses, Monday night was not for you, Mike. The Patriots and Bills played quite a matchup. New England, obviously the storyline. They only threw it three times. They only had to throw it three times as they left with a 14-10 victory and now take control of the AFC East and reside atop the AFC.
Well, you had one play that should stand out if you missed it, and I can see why you turned it off after a while. It's like, I don't want to watch running games, because even the Mannings were complaining on the Manning cast, like, someone want to throw the ball, please? But Josh Allen did have a beautiful pass cut through the wind to Stephon Diggs that bounced off him in the end zone. That's one that has conveniently gone to the wayside in a lot of the analysis. Why? Because it's all about Harris, Stevenson, Bolden, and the run game of the New England Patriots and the Buffalo defensive backs acting like children in their post-game presser when asked if it was embarrassing to get run on like that. Now, a lot of the team stats ended up matching up, but didn't really give you a lot from a fantasy perspective. We knew there was going to be some weather, you and I working together on Sunday morning, kind of going through the games, and the expectation for precipitation was there, but couldn't have expected suddenly at 3-4 p.m. Eastern time, hey, here's reports of 60 mile an hour gusts. I was like, okay then. And yeah, Tyler Bass before the game was like, yeah, he said he's good from about as far as you would kick an extra point, and that proved prophetic when he missed one.
We may have had somebody on the show that needed Tyler Bass to do well on Monday night, and let's just say it wasn't me. So Ryan Bershinger may have even more to talk about when he streams defenses. But you mentioned the running backs, Mike, and that's where I my big takeaway is from this. Obviously nothing to do with the Buffalo running backs, because you don't want any of them.
No.
It is with what's happening with New England, and Damian Harris obviously had the big touchdown run, and then maybe could have had another touchdown run, but that hamstring just ends up catching him and he's done for the night. With the Patriots having bigger fish to fry, Mike, now where they are located in the standings, now with this bye week maybe coming at the right time for them, Ramondre Stevenson is a guy that I think now has value if you're looking on the other side of week 14. Moving on, is I think New England would try to at least play it safe with Damian Harris. You're likely going to make the playoffs if you're New England, and he is your best running back. Don't know how much more better than he is than Ramondre Stevenson, but with the looks of things, it seems that Stevenson's value would go up if New England does play it safe with Harris.
Yeah, when you look at the opportunities, right, this was his second game with at least 20 attempts. He had 100 yards against the Browns in that laugher in the middle of November. And then you look at the game on Monday night, 24 attempts, 78 yards. Look, it doesn't have to be world-beating. It's look at the way he gets to the hole and does not shrink away. And I think there's something refreshing about that, because the running back position, much maligned as it is. But I think you're right. I mean, the bye week comes at the perfect time. We've talked about it on this podcast in past episodes about load management and trying to figure out where you can pick your spots, right? Arizona did it with Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. If I had to play today and this game had immense meaning, you could probably get after it. Instead, we watched Colt McCoy run wild. Yeah, I just said that out loud. So I think the same thing here when you look at the Colts. You look at the Patriots coming out. See, I've got Jonathan Taylor on the brain already. Because they're on bye this week as well. But when you look at the Patriots and their identity, run the ball, play defense, And as you saw here, Mac Jones, even that first half completion was a terrible pass. Jonnu Smith showed, you know, the range of a basketball star or perhaps a high-level goalie in trying to corral that one. So and not exactly the best look there, but you didn't need him. Right, you realized, all right, we're pushing these guys around, and I would imagine that's the formula as you get deeper into December, is that you don't want Mac Jones winging around, which means Stevenson, Bolden, and Harris, when he's right, you're going to hope that you can combine for 35 carries, because that's winning football.
Yeah, I think that there is a clear definition of whose roles, who gets what. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the second half if somebody gets rolling a little bit, but the pecking order is Harris, Stevenson, and Bolden in that order. But if Harris isn't available and they do play it safe, everybody moves up to the next step and could be very plentiful for you, especially now as we're getting into playoff time for season-long leagues. Even in daily leagues, you'll want to put that in your back pocket, but all something to plan for depending on what type of league that you are playing for. Do we need to look back at the three-point conversions and our I should say this. My three-point conversion was fine. It was my give-me-one reasons that were kind of dreadful that we had last week. I got to do the check mark anyway. Got to keep the checks and balances, Mike. I told you to start Jack Doyle. That was a dumb idea. He only had one catch for 13 yards. He had been getting into the end zone for Indianapolis, but when you play the Texans, you don't have to rely as much on the passing game. So Jack Doyle crapped out on me in week 13. Told you to bench Russell Wilson. Probably wasn't a bad idea, but you probably weren't starting him anyway. 231, two touchdowns and an interception for Wilson against the San Francisco 49ers. Obviously, the big fake punt helped. Getting a safety helped. So while the Seahawks get a win, Russell Wilson did look better, but maybe didn't have the monster game, as I told you to bench him.
Yeah, as you look at it going forward, though, I mean, they've got Houston this week, right? If my handy-dandy schedule sits out here right, 7.5-point road favorites. Maybe this is one of those opportunities to find Russell Wilson back into the good grace of fantasy owners. For me, on a three-point conversion, 1 out of 3. Madison got the job done, even though the Vikings, well, they'll wear it as the team to take the L against the Detroit Lions. Arizona, it was the cautionary tale game, you know, play your guys. But look, I would never think you'd have a Bears defender still taking a ball fake as the guy was crossing the goal line. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that. The first touchdown run for Murray was one of the one of those. If I were more a fan instead of the journalist that I am, and I put the small J on that, Dan, I probably would have thrown something through my TV akin to that old Apple ad all those years ago, throwing a giant hammer through the monitor, because that was one of the worst efforts by a defensive player I think I've ever seen. But you get the big numbers from Murray, and obviously the touchdown catch to Hopkins, which I still think deserved the longer review than it got. It all counts just the same. Fine. And then Teddy Bridgewater couldn't make a decision to save his soul on Sunday Night Football. Plenty of opportunities and froze in a big moment. You want to talk about another disappointing effort where opportunities were all over the field and just, you know what, I don't think we want this one. I think we'll leave this possession after 20 plays to the wayside. Just an absolute abject failure. And for me, even suggesting that he would be a part of a QB2 is just stupid.
Well, that game saved me because my three-point conversion, I actually went 3 for 3. Andy Reid off of a bye, again, successful, now 20-3 in the regular season, 8-1 with Mahomes. Javonte Williams coming out party, I'm not the only one that saw that coming. However, what I didn't see coming, at least in how it was he was their only option, it seemed at times, in just dumping down. And Javonte Williams had a great game against Kansas City, so he did star. And the points of Palooza was in Cincinnati, where the Chargers beat the Bengals 41-22. Most points in that game. Mike Williams broke the 100-yard mark, so you had that. Joe Mixon got in the end zone again. Yardage wasn't there, but still a lot of points in that game, and maybe some fantasy fun as well.
Yeah, the Mike Williams fast start certainly helped in keeping me alive in the guillotine league. I had a monster week, so we'll trudge on. And what's funny is, you know, we get into these and to take it to the larger talking points of the week ahead. And certainly down the stretch, Dan, is one of the guys that became available for the team that got eliminated is Patrick Mahomes, who for fantasy purposes, I'll take my shot and leave him benched or on the wire for someone else to claim at this point with, the last 4 weeks, 218 average yardage and 0.4 touchdown passes. You know what? You can pray for the breakout. I'm out.
Well, the one thing we do have for them in Week 14 is a date with the Raiders coming to town. So yes, maybe that could cure all again. Yet the Raiders have recently won in Kansas City. I don't know if they'll do it in Week 14, but Patrick Mahomes did have that 5-touchdown performance against Vegas a few weeks back. The 3-point conversion worked out for me. I know you weren't happy with Teddy Bridgewater. However, there was a defense started this week that, well, let's just say, we're really disappointed in our executive producer, uh-oh, Ryan Bershinger, king of streaming defenses. Have you heard the story, Mike, about the defense that Bursch streamed this week?
No.
It's going to be a lesson learned.
Bursch had hightailed it to Vegas and was laying down chips to back his rostering, so I haven't heard any tales of woe, nor was I called to retrieve him from the roof when things went awry.
Let's hear it, Bursch. How the streaming defense is going week 13?
Well, Mike, you are alluding to what happened to me, and that's the fact that I made the biggest fantasy mistake I've ever made in my life, because I've always been incredibly tedious with my fantasy lineups. I set my lineups after the Monday night game ends. Like, I'm looking at my lineup on a daily basis. Somehow, one slipped through the cracks, and I have no idea how it happened. But let's point out what I did right first, and that was I did stream the Cowboys against the Saints on Thursday night, and they got me 14 points.
Good one. All right.
Okay, sure.
I was able to pick up the Rams in one league, and they got 12 points against the Jaguars. And that's the strong play in that game, because you'd have to be a real idiot to play the Jaguars defense against the Rams in that game. So I don't know how it happened, but I had a fantasy fart, a complete fantasy brain fart here. I just didn't realize that I still had the Jaguars defense in one of my lineups.
Before.
Yes. I don't know how I was paying attention to that team because I picked up Sony Michel an hour before that game and plugged him into the lineup. And I still just completely overlooked that the Jaguars defense was sitting there in my lineup and gave me -6 points at the end of it. I noticed it about 15 minutes after kickoff, and I'm like, oh, this is good. This is great. I lost that game by 11 points. So,
that's a rough one. You could Jaguars. Probably make an argument, Mike, that any defense that was available would have been better than what Jacksonville provided.
And they were, yes.
Yeah, 100%. Anyone. Mm-hmm.
Other than Houston, probably true, right?
Yep.
Yeah, outside of Houston.
What a dismal. I'm sorry to hear that, Bursch. That's a tough one. The Sony Michel pickup inspired, certainly based on the information that was starting to trickle out at the end of the week. Mm-hmm. Expectations that Henderson would be limited, and then they said, hey, it's the Jaguars.
Yep.
So don't bother.
There's something to that of the Henderson thing. And remind me, there's something that I also want to say about the defenses. But I got burned last year with a Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if you remember. I think it was a Sunday night game when his status was in question. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, no, he's going to be active. Then we find out after the game that he just suited up to be the emergency running back.
Right.
So Mike, to your point about Daryl Henderson and him being limited, I took him out of the lineup even though he was going to be active. And I think that's something that people need to be aware of moving forward, that even if a guy is active, if there's any thought that maybe somebody else could get, you know, even, you know, 50% of the workload, maybe it's best you don't play that guy.
Yeah, we start looking at matchups and expectations, right? In this one, unless you were the biggest Jacksonville Jaguar fan, like Jason from The Good Place, who was the great Blake Bortles fan. I don't know if you've seen the show, Dan, but he ran around talking about Blake Bortles at least once
an episode. Oh, okay, yeah. I've never seen it. Was that the Ted Danson show?
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. To me, it's one of the finest pieces of television over the last decade plus. But he was obsessed with the Jaguars, one of the characters, and would always talk about Blake Bortles and his brilliance. And towards the end of the show, when it was about to, you know, and it was in its final season, one of those that they had their natural arc. So there was no, hey, we want season 7, we want season 8. It's like, this is how we're ending it. Bortles was no longer a member of the Jaguars, and they had to break it to him. And it was one of those soul-crushing. It was like, you know, you would normally use it as if, all right, a member of the family passed or the dog or whatever. Sure. Here it was, Blake Bortles was no longer a member of the Jaguars. So it crushed this guy's soul. But you have those moments on the schedule where, you know, the opportunity is to find some load management. And there it was. Like in plain sight for you. So it's a difficult one, especially when you're already with a number of these teams that are using 2 or 3 running backs and you don't have that clear-cut guy. And so now we're at that horrible part of the season right before the playoffs where you see that gamesmanship really cycling in with that extra week on the back end.
Yeah, they get that extra day next week because they have the Cardinals on Monday Night Football, so that could help Henderson as well. And when you were sandwiched between games against the Packers and the Cardinals, made sense, yeah, that Henderson didn't play. And by the way, Ryan Bershinger's mistake on playing the Jaguars is a feather in my cap for the guy that likes to stick with defenses. I am anti-streaming. And in fact, I have 2 defenses on my roster, which I know is blasphemy, but I picked up the Patriots the week that I needed them when the Rams were on the bye, and then they had their huge game against the Falcons, and I just have never made any corresponding moves where I felt like, because we have position limits where you can only have so many running backs and so many wide receivers, sure. So if I'm making moves, I've got to make sure that I don't overload, and so I ended up keeping that. So that's a win. Bershinger's loss is a win for us guys who are against streaming defenses.
Well, and that's a key point, though, right? What often is a good defense in the real world of the NFL doesn't necessarily translate to the fantasy realm, but with the Patriots, you're talking about 26 takeaways, which is third are tied for 2nd in the league, you know, ironically, with the Bills and the Colts, believe it or not, number 1.
Oh, my favorite thing that I saw from the Patriots Bills as we kind of move ahead. Local TV news in LA put up a graphic on, I won't tell you what affiliate, as ABC said, the Patriots Bills game, Patriots 14. Bills 10 with a Portland Trailblazers logo next to the Bills.
Oh, great.
Absolutely magnificent. I don't know if you just, I don't know how that stuff works. I mean, we're in media, but I wouldn't know how to work the graphics. So how a Portland Trailblazers logo pops up next to the Buffalo Bills, I have no idea. None
I'm
going to
guess that they were building multiple boards, right? Because you had the Clippers Blazers playing on a Monday night.
So, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's actually, that does make sense.
So someone got caught in the switches and did a cut and paste of the wrong thing. But either way, that usually gets checked by 3 people before it goes to air.
Oh, man. Well, your correction just ruined my story, but hey, that's all right. No,
it does. No, it doesn't. Though I just happened to know that because I knew my show with Jason Smith was preempted for a good chunk of the time in Los Angeles because of Clipper coverage.
What annoys me so much with the Seahawks logo, it's not the logo; it's that there are so many entities that still use what a lot of us would call the Hasselbeck Holmgren Seahawk logo. Mm. And there was a slight modification when to the bird, obviously the uniforms are completely different, but it's a different blue that they're obviously using. And the bird is different. The Seahawk head is different, but I see so many, like, even like when, if you go and like search for mock drafts and people are trying to use logos, It's the old logo, that middle logo that people still use, which is so annoying because that one kind of has the weird shade of blue at the back of the Seahawk head, where the current one has a more like grayish sort of color. So it's always annoyed me as a Seahawks fan.
See, you've got that, but you got a victory this week, Dan.
I did. Yes, we did.
I did not. I had a very painful 3+ hours watching a dismal Bears game. My brothers couldn't even get rid of their seats where tickets got as low as $17.
It's a rough one.
That's how bad it was.
You know what, though? I'm gonna say this as we kind of like to transition looking ahead to week 14 and taking what we had from week 13. I get if you're a Bears fan, you don't want to sit in the weather. I get if you're a Bears fan, you may not want to sit and watch a Matt Nagy team. I completely understand that. And even though the Cardinals have the best record coming in, they still are the Arizona Cardinals and maybe not that draw if it was a different NFC opponent or maybe even a division opponent. But from that game, Mike, the takeaway that I had from it, conditions bad. You didn't have high expectations because of the weather, what we were going to get fantasy-wise. Kyler Murray, after missing a month, had his most effective game running the football.
Right.
And so as you look forward and look ahead to what Arizona is done, I wonder if there was a part of a concerted effort to make sure that Kyler Murray wasn't going to put himself in harm's way. And now you have him, because the last thing I would think, Mike, if coming off of an ankle injury and yeah, you missed a month, is that you would want him running around. But he had 10 carries, ended up with 59 yards, and you talked about the touchdown runs. I think that's something that you could see from Kyler Murray moving on, which makes him more dangerous and more viable as your fantasy starter.
Yeah, makes the team that much more explosive. Obviously, they want to get Edmonds back, but James Conner's been fantastic for them. You get DeAndre Hopkins back. And while he may not be at 100 yet, certainly has showed the toe-tapping ability and all of those things that, and presence on the field that you would expect, even those smallish efforts from some of your other would-be wideouts. But if he's going to be able to run the ball and it's the, all right, wait for it, go. We're now in December, so let's start running out what our offense should be, which includes more design runs and opportunities for him. Look how much more dangerous they get just off that, right? When you're already cruising along, you went 2-1 with Colt McCoy. Now you're sitting at 10-2, point differential of about 120. On the year, and you go down the stretch. You got the showdown with the Rams on Monday Night Football, then on the road at Detroit, Colts at home, on the road at Dallas, and by then Dallas might just be punch drunk from the division games, and then finish the season with the Seahawks at home. And the Seahawks, you know, based on schedule, they're still hanging around the chicken coop even at 4-8, just good enough to maybe screw things up. So having the extra element of Murray's legs for fantasy purposes, absolutely a gold rush. So looking at those guillotine leagues, or maybe in some leagues where folks got panicked by him missing a month, there might be opportunity.
Yeah, I was surprised at the rushing numbers. And the other thing with that is you mentioned Chase Edmonds. That also may play a part in some of his usage once Edmonds comes back healthy. Maybe they don't need Murray as much. But obviously, the situations will also dictate how much he actually runs. The other takeaway that is nothing from Week 13, but it's just looking ahead. For as great as Javonte Williams was for Denver, I don't know how much Denver is going to want to run Javonte Williams into the ground, because they do like to grind and run that football. Once Melvin Gordon is back healthy, I still think he takes a chunk, and they may even go back to 50-50, Mike. Maybe a long-term play for Javonte Williams since this is his rookie year. I know a guy like Jonathan Taylor last year really turned it on in the second half of the year, but I still think when Melvin Gordon comes back healthy, Denver uses him despite the great game that Williams had on Sunday night.
I'll tell you what, by the time we get to draft day 2022, it's going to be hard to argue him out of the top five so long as we get some assurances that he can be a red zone and goal line back, right, which is where Gordon has siphoned off some of the greatness and possibilities. But, you know, you look at the game he had, 23 carries, 102, and six catches for 76 yards against Kansas City, runs hard and just keeps churning and just fun to watch him work behind the offensive line. It's just too bad Teddy Two Gloves was careless with the football. Otherwise, oh, what a game it might have been. Instead, we're looking at a guy going, all right, this is a top five play. But to your point, for rookie year, now that, you know, this game went awry and you're in a very crowded field for playoff contention, you're trying to figure out what you are. Yeah, I would suspect you go back to some of that split. So not that you're, you know, stealing from my mom in the save him for good pile, but you're also looking at him as a centerpiece of an offense with some other trigger man for 2022.
And I also think that it actually worked with Melvin Gordon. Like, it wasn't not working, you know? And so what Williams just ended up doing, I actually think, Mike, you would have seen a similar workload if the roles were reversed. If Williams was hurt and Gordon ended up getting the start, I think you would have maybe have seen similar numbers with Melvin Gordon against the Chiefs Sunday night. That's why I think that if you want to buy low on somebody right now, maybe Melvin Gordon is that guy, because I think that he still has value moving on.
Still has those red zone opportunities on the board. You got games against the Raiders towards the end of the year. You've got Cincinnati. You've got Detroit. Still some opportunities.
Absolutely. Patriots, Eagles, Dolphins, Colts on bye in week 14. Any storylines that you're keeping your eye on, Mike, as we move towards playoff time in fantasy football?
Yeah, I think when we're trying to parse through, I mean, this is that point in the season where you just have to exhale and recognize that those sleepers that you thought were going to wake up and be a hero for you, they're napping. You know, they decided to take a long winter's nap a little bit early, maybe planning for the holidays like they're, you know, some of the also-rans in the NFL. So churning your roster and doing some of those cleaning parts. Likewise, I mentioned Mahomes before. Like, they're some of those stars that we would normally have expected to give us some thrills down the stretch where it's like, okay, maybe this is just I keep them on my roster as a defensive play, so if they have a big day, it's not against me, but it's going to be awful hard to argue them into a fantasy lineup. And I think, you know, week 14 is, I think, where we're at with some of those
waiver wire ads for week 14, who are guys that people may need to pick up now or never, even if it's a daily fantasy situation. Who are some names we should be tracking as we get closer to games this weekend?
Well, you look at Russell Gage for the Falcons, still available in a ton of leagues, even though last 3 weeks he's had 30 targets, Dan, going up against Carolina. And Carolina still favored at home against Atlanta, even though they're reinserting Cam Newton.
And they fired Joe Brady, their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that story was interesting. Like, we didn't get into it because of just the oddity that was the Monday Night Football game. So Smith and I had that one on the board and didn't really get to address that one. I'm sure that'll find its way back into the mix as the week goes on. But just kind of crazy. Here, work with three different quarterbacks. You're missing your top option as a runner and receiver almost all year. But you know what? See you in hell. Okay, well, cool.
They fired him during the early game window of the bye week. So NFL games are going on, and all of a sudden it pops up, Panthers have fired offensive coordinator Joe Brady. And you're like, okay, why would, you know, you want to talk about trying to bury a story.
Sure.
Yeah, do it when there's seven games going on in the regular season and you're not playing. And then Matt Rhule said on Monday that the effort was made to reach out to Brady on Saturday to talk to him, but they like couldn't get a hold of him, or he couldn't be reached. So it was just so strange with what's going on, but Hey, that's the Carolina Panthers in 2021 for you.
So that means Joe Brady's wearing some college hat and a band is playing behind him by the middle or the end of the week. <It's>,
man.
Just what a carousel. Absolutely insanity. How about Tevin Coleman of your New York football Jets with Carter banged up? He's become the lead man. Double-digit touches back-to-back weeks, 27 carries over those 2 weeks. While he's not huge in the yardage total, at this point we need availability. A lot of injuries plus the bye weeks means for strange bedfellows if you're still starting the traditional two running backs. A couple of wide receivers slash tight ends to look at. Devontae Parker got activated. Tua is on a roll, so opportunity there. Obviously, keep an eye out if your league still has Tua hanging around the waiver wire. Again, not world-beating on a week-to-week basis, but someone to look at. And then you got KJ Osborne and Tyler Conklin that we've talked about. Adam Thielen leaving the Sunday loss against Detroit very early and with the Thursday game against Pittsburgh, as we'll get into in a moment, won't be around. Foster Moreau. Why? Because I just love the name. Not quite the doctor, the Island of Dr. Moreau. Really creepy book and movie. But something to get into here for fantasy purposes. And then coming out of the bye week, because we've always got the health concerns in Philadelphia, looking at Kenneth Gainwell, again, off of this week, so plenty of time for Jordan Howard and or Miles Sanders to get right. But, again, we're playing defense and trying to get ahead of the game where maybe you don't have to spend as much of your free agent acquisition budget or getting into, you know, kind of those priority issues with the running back position. And then I guess finally, because he's playing the New York football Jets, and by a lot of metrics, the Jets pass defense is fine. But you know what? Taysom Hill gets shot up once again, and he'll be able to run around and currently available in about two-thirds of leagues. And I say that one with great reticence because I don't expect another 100-yard game, but we've seen everybody, short of you and I, Dan, run on the Jets this year.
I missed on the Russell Gage a little bit for his opportunities. In fact, about a month ago, I told our good buddy Johnny Ramos, as we were talking about it, I said, just get rid of Gage. You can end up, he'll be available. Nobody's going to go and actively look at him. Thought Kyle Pitts was going to be the main guy, and obviously the Ridley situation was happening at that time, but I still wasn't completely sold on Gage. Targets are there. How about the hero on Sunday for the Lions, Amon-Ra St. Brown, 12 targets, yeah. 10 receptions in that game. They do have Denver coming up on Sunday, so maybe you don't want him going up against that ball-hawking secondary, but if the Lions get down, there could be opportunities. And I'm going to give you one other name because it transitions to our final segment. You kind of alluded it. What about Ben Roethlisberger? Steelers had success throwing the football against the Ravens and their now depleted secondary. I think he could get something done against Minnesota. We saw Jared Goff get something done against Minnesota for a Thursday night play. And plus with the byes, if you have a Jalen Hurts on a bye that isn't available this weekend, maybe you're looking for a quarterback. Why not give Big Ben a shot? Crazy stat, Mike, I looked up. In the games that Ben Roethlisberger has played this season, when he's thrown the ball 41 or more times, all losses. He did have one game that they won when he threw 40, but it was in the overtime win against Seattle. Otherwise, all the games they've won with him as quarterback, he's thrown under 40 passes. That was the case against the Ravens, but still, they had success with Deontay Johnson. So give Ben Roethlisberger maybe a look on Thursday night and give you a reason to watch Steelers-Vikings.
See, I dig that about you. You transitioned so seamlessly. I didn't even get my obligatory reference to the fact that Mike Davis scored a touchdown. Nobody played him. Nobody owns him, nor am I telling you to pick him up. I just thought it would be, you know, kind of funny in week 13. Oh, hey, look, man. He showed up on the box score.
Yes, he did. He did. I give him credit. I don't hate Mike Davis. It was never, see it.
No, absolutely. It was more just he was a guy that would have been drafted high. I at least expected him to have some functional role week to week, only four carries in week 13, but he did find the end zone. I could not have anticipated the Cordarrelle Patterson experiment, but we've talked about that in prior episodes. But, you know, Thursday night football, usually one that we kind of wring our hands and try to you know, wrap our arms around it to see if we can't squeeze out a play or two. Roethlisberger, I think, has inspired Minnesota. 21 passing touchdowns allowed, eighth worst for fantasy points against for quarterbacks. So opportunity there. Deontay Johnson obviously going to play. Najee Harris gets back in. And it's a primetime game. And we've had this discussion before. I know you had this when I did, both with our colleague Jonas Knox, who did a little bit of the, hey, what's wrong with Kirk after in late games or primetime games? So that'll be on display. So we'll see what he brings to bear. You'll play Alexander Mattison, but Pittsburgh's front stout, and they should all be available for this one. So not expecting necessarily fireworks from Madison in this one. For Cousins, it's a big spot, huge spot. So we'll see what he's able to bring. I would rank him as a high-end number two with some trepidation about inserting him into my lineups.
Minnesota protects him, but at least they're not giving up sacks. However, the injury to Thielen, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, Justin Jefferson's amazing.
Ridiculous game in week 13.
Just so good. But I do wonder on what Thielen's absence will mean for that game. I think we'll have a good one on Thursday night. How much it'll mean in the long run for both of these teams of the postseason, that's a different story. But Vikings-Steelers should be unique. And a Super Bowl rematch of a Super Bowl from long, long ago when you're talking about the Minnesota Vikings.
I'm just excited, shaking it up a little bit, you know, with some teams in prime time. Mike Tomlin and the Steelers eking out that win. Harbaugh going for two, so great theater there and consternation in Baltimore. But for Pittsburgh, they'd been left for dead. Mm-hmm. And you see that Roethlisberger, while he can't do it, like I joke, it's the Toby Keith had the song, I ain't as good as I was once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. He may not be able to wing it downfield 30 times a game, right? The big arm fighting off three defenders like you would be in a battlefield saying, no, you know, like all your comic book movies and everything, to still complete a pass. That's not the guy he is anymore. But every once in a while, there's still a pretty deep ball that gets there, and his receivers know from working with him to this point that they've got to work back to the ball. So you get some odd-looking plays, but a completion is a completion. It's like the old adage of baseball analysis. You know, the little squibber up the third base line looks like a line shot to left single in the box score.
Yes.
Same thing here with Ben. If he finds Johnson or Claypool or Freiermuth or whoever it is, they all count just the same.
He's Mike Harmon. Get him on Twitter at Swollen Dome. Find me, Dan Beyer, on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. And it was Super Bowl IX, to be specific. So that was the first one that the Steelers run began, the first of four with Terry Bradshaw and crew. So a rematch of Super Bowl IX on Thursday night on Fox. All right, it's winning time, people. We hope you listened to what we said, and we're going to have more for you on a new episode that drops on Friday morning. Whether you're wrapping up your regular season, if you're getting ready for the playoffs, or you're still doing daily stuff before, if you're like Mike and you're still alive in a guillotine league, we will have you covered for week 14. Until then, be well, and we will talk to you very soon.